You go down this cliff, go left down the cliff, yeah. Left, and then just tumble for a while, and then you should be there.
My truth is the truth that you will never understand.
Private ownership is one single individual giving green light. Doesn't that tell you that your system is more akin to authoritarian dictatorship?
No, we had a king. I thought we're an autonomous collective.
What the heck is a D? How come you can buy our house when it's our house and we live there?
Just when these American citizens needed their rights the most, their government took them away. The rights aren't rights if someone could take them away.
They have every man in a straitjacket. To leave a country is like breaking out of jail. And to enter a country is like going through the eye of a needle.
I don't know if you've noticed, but our two-party system is a bowl of shit looking in the mirror at itself.
Shout out! Revolution!
Police Academy essentially opens up policing to the citizens. It's a pretty anarchic idea for an 80s movie.
Not only go on strike, but we need to fire the bosses. This whole you getting paid more, doing less work thing, it's not working out, Steve.
Early in the morning, they posted a picture of a little sign that the Department of Homeland Security put on its door that said, the office will be closed today. Appointments will have to be rescheduled, you know, this and that. So obviously it was closed in anticipation of this all-day protest put on by DSA and attended by some Socialist Party comrades, various anarchists, and other, probably a lot of liberal
and
activists
liberal groups,
were also there as well. And also a lot of the pictures showed, so I believe the direct action was to make sure that employees couldn't come and go. So instead they just closed the office.
We shut it down for a day.
Shut it down for a day. And, that meant that they weren't, putting themselves in any danger of being, taken down by police, like has been happening at other more sustained direct action efforts at ICE offices across the country.
Mm-hmm. Where they're setting up Occupy encampments of sorts.
And they're getting quite swiftly taken down by the police.
Suppressed, come down on.
Yes.
Because the lessons have been learned by the state since 2011. At the time, the cops and the cities didn't know what to do or handle it because it was at the time unprecedented. Then, in the following months, courts started making rulings and basically said that it was unlawful to camp in parks and so on. And this wasn't really free speech, so there wasn't any First Amendment protection, so go ahead and have at it. And thus there was that coordinated sweep of all Occupy encampments, mostly at the same time, minus a few exceptions like Albany, where we had quote-unquote friendly DAs, but then that just kind of meant there was just another month of nadir, of decline. So, especially since the encampment here was slightly, quite less radical in its overall character. But since then, as Michael White has put it, the state has learned we can't protest the same, we should never protest the same way twice, because the police and the state and the authorities that, let's say, you're protesting and that you're opposing, even on logistical grounds of, I don't like this thing that they're doing in particular today, maybe not the problem is their existence as an agency, but perhaps it should be. That is, where's that go now? Did you have to just keep escalating? I think might be a question. And then usually the answer is no, we can't escalate because they have all the guns and we're not trained to fight in that manner, unless it's even if it's in this guerrilla tactic of hit, vandalize, run, kind of stuff.
There was some pretty good vandalism at the protest. Mm-hmm. They totally taped over Department of Homeland Security, mm-hmm. replaced Homeland Security with just fascism,
mm-hmm.
Wrote stuff like no walls and no more borders, end mm-hmm. the concentration camps.
Yeah.
Now, they're using what I think is the correct vocabulary to frame this and hopefully get some news coverage. I don't follow the local press and news stations, but I'm sure this event made local news. And, this is what makes all direct action kind of fall under the umbrella of symbolic action. Mm-hmm. You know, not to get too Lacanian or Zizekian on you, but everything is translated through the symbolic order of
the
language.
Seeing it, the media coverage.
Yes. And, you know,
you're doing this not to have a real effect, but to get attention, which is currency to the cause of Abolish ICE, which does cross the line in actually attempting to roll back a Bush-era policy in a more substantial way than the Obama administration ever did.
Oh.
As we pointed out, that the Democrats aren't as mad as Trump, but they are still militaristic and the objections, and then you can see these splits come up as soon as the conversation starts as, well, I don't want to open borders. And a fellow Green Party member was objected to the language of Abolish ICE, but her stance and viewpoint was more that, well, it's just one part of the entire justice system. And that means we need to take out or abolish the entire justice system. And she really liked what I had to say when I told her, like, well, you know, if you reform something enough, you are abolishing it. You're transforming it. It's not the same thing anymore.
Mm-hmm.
That you can think about all system change in that way, that if you change enough pieces, it's entirely different. But then it's kind of like this metaphorical trick called a Greek hero's ship. I think it's Perseus' ship, and because the Argonauts, or Jason the Argonauts. And, you know, he left home, and he kept replacing parts of his ship that broke along the way. By the time he got back, he had replaced every part of his ship, every little floorboard, every piece of wood.
Is it the same ship then?
Is it the same ship?
Yes.
Now, it's still technically like our own bodies. It is the same ship. So if you, but of course, in that case, you're just replacing the parts.
It's still a ship.
Like with people. Like, oh, we fire those cops, fire the president. You know, it's like, well, you're just replacing one part of the ship. Got to replace the whole ship. Yes. Make a new ship.
Yeah, maybe we should be having abolish Congress protests.
Or abolish the state, which is what anarchists do, and they're not taken seriously yet. But I think this Abolish ICE might be a good entry point. It's like, well, if we're actually talking about doing away with one agency, then maybe we can talk about more.
And the
justice system itself.
The message is getting out there. Abolish ICE is now all over the internet, and it wasn't just a few weeks ago. Mm-hmm. This issue really has been taken up in the body populace and in the mass media, such that people are actually thinking about this now.
And that's the effect that we're going to focus on. Otherwise, legislatively, we might even get a fig leaf.
Right.
Which is kind of the best you can hope for, is that you put on the pressure, you make demands, and then legislators respond by doing something, as they put it. Which is what a lot of activists just want, something.
Yes.
And then that something is usually a fig leaf, as in something that just covers the problem and doesn't fix it.
Well, this is what the labor
body
movement...
Body cameras is kind of an example of that.
Yep. You demand one thing that you may not get in order to get a whole bunch of other things that you want. You never reveal your bottom line. You always go above that and then work your way down in negotiations. This is something that labor unions do all the time. That's a well-learned lesson. So we may not get ICE abolished, but hopefully we can get some of these kids, you know, reunited with their parents and not have to represent themselves in courts. We got like the youngest lawyers in the world now, because 6-year-old immigrant refugees have to represent themselves in court. And those images...
Again, that's a justice system problem.
That's a justice system problem.
That there aren't defenders there available, right?
We don't have enough of them.
Or that the law doesn't even require that they be provided.
Right.
And then that's the case for even just poor people, that there aren't enough defenders. And although there was a move to help alleviate that in New York, Governor Cuomo vetoed it.
Thanks, Cuomo.
You should be
president.
Let's see.
Keep on telling yourself that, Andrew.
Let's see, what else was
it? It is your destiny.
This? The Yeah, the...
I'm just going to keep on ripping on Andrew Cuomo while you collect your thoughts.
Go ahead, because I'm vamping here.
I did remember one article I read today. We're starting to see some articles come out about the 2020 presidential election. You know, we're starting to get there.
It begins as soon as Trump won, it was like, who are the Democrats going to run against him?
Mm-hmm.
And then you had that Harris woman. And Booker stepping up.
Harris, Booker, Cuomo, and Gillibrand, I've all heard their names.
Yeah.
And in the most recent polls.
And Biden too.
Gillibrand and Cuomo both got like 1%. 1%.
Oh,
horrible. Yeah. Like they have neither one of them. If they start running presidential campaigns.
Let's run another moderate New Yorker.
Oh, it'll be a joke campaign like George Pataki was. Mm-hmm. Everyone forgets that George Pataki actually ran for president,
yeah.
And nothing came of it.
It's a piece of trivia, bar trivia. It wasn't name all of them, but just name as many who can name the most candidates who were running in 2016.
And Joe Biden came up in like the 30s. Hillary Clinton was in like the 20s or the teens, and then Bernie Sanders was also
known
in there.
Enough. That people can oh yeah, he's a nice guy.
The most recent article
I don't know
I read,
how much he's bought too, but you know, he's a nice bought person. And nice capitalism is enough for me.
And speaking of nice capitalism, once again, like I mentioned, Bernie Sanders. The most recent article I read from The Hill was inside information that yes, he's thinking of running.
Oh yes,
the election. He's thinking of it.
Remember, he put out a book last year,
and
that's the main signal.
He's making the moves. He's making the moves, right? Like you
moving to the right.
At this stage in the game, it's too early. The thing that people who are running will say when asked is that I have no plans to run. Hillary did this for a long, long time. Everybody knew she was running.
Yeah,
this was kind of an epistemological crisis that we.
And then
have
it just
in
embeds
campaign.
The idea that she's just a liar. Because she can't even be honest.
Because everyone
that.
Knew. I think Bernie
she
is.
She has to lie about that. I mean,
he's a little
lie
more honest
everything.
Than Hillary.
Yeah. And.
I expect him to run.
Mm-hmm. Oh, so does everyone else.
That's what they're saying. The race is his to lose. They're saying that 2020 is going to be Bernie versus Trump.
Well, that's putting it on a person, which is, of course, their way of then alleviating their responsibility when they cheat.
There's that.
And block him. And I'm talking about capitalist. Power here, which controls both parties, and Bernie, his moves that you mentioned are him changing positions, moving to the right in some ways,
yep.
To alleviate their concerns and fears, so that they will not block him as seriously as they did last time.
But I think they will. I think that
they will anyway.
I think they will anyway. I have this gut feeling that
that's a symbol.
The 2020 election is going to be a horrible rerun of 2016. It's going to be like the second season of a TV show that was already bad, and the TV show is going to get even worse.
And the anti-third party propaganda has been pretty effective as far as that whole blaming people like us for all of those people who just stayed home.
I didn't stay home. I voted for Jill Stein in the election.
And so did I, but I'm just talking a macro sense of how people talk. Like some guy at Left Forum was like literally came up to our Green Party table and just started ranting at us about how like all the bull he has to deal with. He's eyebrow deep in crap, and he blames us for Supreme Court rulings. And I can tell you, if you're afraid of what the Supreme Court does, you've already lost. Because what are you doing in any other sense? Like, if the Supreme Court's rulings are going to decide your fate, just say you're enslaved then. Slave to courts, you know, or the law. And what kind of autonomy do you have? That's my challenge to those who dance about the Supreme Court. Because guess what? We already have new conservative judges on there in the last few years, Gorsuch and whatever. The two women aren't enough to balance it, sorry. And they rule in a conservative manner all the time. That's their purpose.
So did Anthony Kennedy in a couple of decisions.
Yeah.
He was unreliable.
Kennedy, I mean, this thing about it was Kennedy leaving, so we're going to lose the swing vote guy, I guess. But, you know, guess what? He ruled against unions every time.
Citizens
so,
United.
So the fact that things are going to get worse for unions and worse for money, you know, fair elections. You're full of it. You're not looking. I'm sorry. Well, I mean... saying, you know, the charge that, you know, you're wrong is obviously a painful one, and maybe I should avoid it. What I mean is there's a mistake, a fundamental mistake of, you know, I think you're missing something here. I think you're not looking at all of the rulings in the history of the court and all the other things that, not just the last 4 years or 8 years. I mean, why don't the Democrats just be as obstructionist as the Republicans? They still have to work with them. And by the way, this is them being the resistance, okay? They just voted for all the military spending and all of the tax cuts. It wasn't really enough.
Yeah, this whatever resistance thing is
whatever obstruction that is, it's not, they're not doing it.
It's the biggest joke, and it's a pure propaganda campaign. Every time I see hashtag resistance, I say, actually, it's hashtag assistance.
But now to turn to coverage of, so there's a group, neo-Nazi mostly, definitely white supremacist, called Patriot Prayer. And they're one of these alt-right groups made up of these aggro men who don't know how to deal with their feelings. So they just turn to rage and fear. And that's kind of what fascists do and are. And so, and they're claiming this, you know, at least a PR victory of sorts over Antifa. So for the last year, the alt-right has been in decline. Their organizations and talking heads have been one by one retiring, giving up. Like, Antifa's beating them.
Good.
Like, they're not, we're not able to go on tour like we should because we're being deplatformed. Oh, yes, good. No, Nazis should not have a platform.
No platform for the
fascists. So, yeah, so that's official position of the show. We're no platformers. When it comes...
Yes, there's no marketplace where those ideas should have any value.
Now, the media is kind of framing it. They use the word clash, which just reminds me of Gaza and Israel.
It's always a clash. That's a clash. It's never a massacre of the Israeli state against the Gazan people.
Now, if it's a liberal or progressive showing the video, they literally just show the 5 seconds of alt-righters charging into an Antifa black bloc. And they just cut right away, like, because basically what happens next is explicit violence and people bleeding, and they want to show all that. And it is bad. It looks bad because it is bad.
Got to keep things PG for broadcast television.
Yeah, and so they can basically just show that this faraway shot. So, like, if I'm, as I just saw it, I didn't know what the hell happened. So... I went to What's Going Down, the people who actually report and share reports from people who are on the ground. So I'm going to share that. Against the Fascist report from Portland on June 30th. Report and sobering analysis from someone who was on the ground. When we got there, it was almost 4, and with large groups on both sides, it's very hard to estimate numbers, but it seemed as if there were about 150 on the Antifa side and 60 on the Fascist side. The rally started at... And by the way, to reiterate, anti-fascists are an assemblage of super radicals like me and Colin, anarchists, Dem socialists, other liberal allies. It's more of a coalition of people who are actually willing to fight fascists on the streets rather than at the ballot box or just twiddle their thumbs and curl their clutches when neo-Nazis run for office. Because I see these stories sometimes of, like, neo-Nazi running as Republican.
There's a few of them out there, yeah.
And I'm like, okay, are they going to run someone against him? Like, what's the party doing, right? Dem party. What are the Bernie-crats doing?
Well, Antifa usually shows up when your neo-Nazi groups hold some kind of a public rally to counter protest and be like, just try and shut them down.
Yeah. Because to march unabated is to be legitimate.
No, it's an act of violence by the fascists to say, we are here and we hate you and we have a right to exist. Mm-hmm. These people have no right to exist. They need to be beaten
ideologically
down.
So I'm just going to reference it, but I'm just going to point out to make this move along that you should, when he counts the number of fascists as 60, but he makes note that if you count all the police that were there who are supportive and helping the fascists, then that number increases quite dramatically. And that means that they were incessantly outnumbered. So once or twice, a school bus appeared carrying more people to the Patriot Prayer side. Around 6, they began marching. When they first stepped off the street, it appeared they were facing away from us and would begin marching that direction. However, just before they began moving, they turned towards us and instead marched directly towards us. We intercepted them at the corner right by the plaza, and people threw eggs, garbage, and lit fireworks at them. There were loud flashbangs that went off and other fireworks popping. DHS, all right, Department of Homeland Security troops. So these were not local police.
Not
even,
just cops. No.
And not just state troopers, feds. Whatever. These were feds. Yes, exactly. Why are they protecting these fascists? Started firing rubber bullets and BBs at us, and many folks got hit. Some protesters, by the way, rubber bullets, they still pierce the skin. It's basically
hurt like hell.
Yeah, it's serious injury is still caused. Some protesters took hits to the head with these projectiles and were severely injured. At least one person was taken directly to the hospital after this attack by the police. There was no warning from DHS that they were about to fire. They simply started attacking. There were pepper balls thrown to the crowd by the pigs, and we were pushed back as mace started to fill the air. Patriot Pair turned around the corner, and we had a block separating us. So basically, their numbers were skirmished a bit. And so their numbers were dwindled by the police firing into them, mm-hmm. and also just being there in general. The march went north a few blocks, and we turned onto a street we were passing by. There were multiple bangs and more fireworks set off. He also mentions, I think, a bunch, like half of their number actually went somewhere else, like, or they stayed in the plaza. Our numbers had shrunk, and people leaving for medical care and supporting those injured. We kept going north. There was a quick thinking and combined effort as people took garbage cans and construction materials to build fast, to put up barricades. The group made barricades and moved on quickly as the march continued north. There were multiple paddy wagons that came down the street behind us, and many police started to emerge from all sides. We crossed onto a very, very frightening thing. We crossed onto a side street to confront the march a second time and were met with a wall of cops protecting them in the front. There were rocks and other projectiles thrown aimed at the march and the cops as well. At the time, the march was a fair distance away still, and there didn't appear to be a way to get close to them. Many deafening bangs started to fire off, presumably by the cops. More chaos ensued as our numbers continued to shrink as people got separated, because it's like practically they're in a kettle already as
right.
They're following the march. Which is basically like you've already kind of lost as far as the ground, like you can't determine what the ground is. Almost like the police are going to angle you and basically then trap them with the fascists. And by that time, then they were outnumbered.
Yep.
And got punched.
Split them up. Divide and conquer.
Still, when I saw my friends being beaten on the street, surrounded by huge men kicking their bodies and stamping on their heads, I ran back into the mist, bat swinging, alone. I would not have been able to push them back, but others ran back into the crowd with me, and with fierce anger, we were able to rescue our injured friends and get them to safety. To the fascists, this was a win because they outmuscled us. But neither my goal nor my desire is ever to be a walking, talking ball of masculine violence. The fascists outmuscle us because all they know is violence, force, and a misogynistic culture that values pure strength over anything else. None of this is to say that we should not use violence against them. Of course, we must respond to their violence with our own. I don't know any anti-fascist who doesn't want to defend themselves. So we can't outmuscle them, but we can outsmart them. We're more agile, we are smarter, we are braver. We love each other with a force that the fascists could never understand. We have so many tools at our disposal. We were ill-equipped on Saturday to defend ourselves as much as we would have liked. We never want to see our friends hospitalized, broken, concussed. We did what we could with the tools we brought with us. Let us learn from that, and we need more tools, both physical and mental. We all need to consider what more we could have done and what we need to accomplish it. All they know is how to punch, but we are creative, not just in the streets. Remember that in the streets is never the only domain in which we fight fascism. We don't have to follow the rules. And our creativity, internal strength, and defiance will lead to their destruction. So, and so, like he mentioned, that you know half of them went to a different place because they thought something else was going to happen there. So there needs to be more like internal discipline as well, and that might require a temporary elected commander.
Well, these
something like that.
These things are always just by their very nature chaotic.
Yeah.
You know, like the fascists clearly there did something that Antifa did not expect by turning on them and then moved forward to confront them.
which doesn't usually happen, especially when they do have police between them.
Mm-hmm.
Because, like at Unite the Right, the police also pepper sprayed the alt-righters.
Yes, the police never, ever protect left-wing protesters. Let's get this one thing clear. Mm-hmm. It's always radical right-wing and even mainstream right-wing protesters and demonstrators that have police protection. Because let's face, a lot of the individual members of the police force have this same political ideology. And that's why they became cops. That's why they are pigs. That's why we say... And there's so many of them. That's why we go, all cops are bastards.
Now, that is true. But I also want to point out, to be fair, recently with the Poor People's Campaign, there's police protecting them from traffic as they block intersections, that the police cover both types of protesters, left and right, as also a means of control.
Yes.
The permitting process, usually you have more police presence if you don't permit. This is because then organizers are then held responsible with the power of the law, and they can be taken to court and lose, because that's been tried. And the permitting process is a way of controlling protests and keeping them civil, so they're not disruptive. So if they are disruptive in any way, and you'll never see right wingers being disruptive because they care about our war economy and whatever too much, they will put it as they care about everybody and they don't want to hurt nobody's business. But if that's the case, then if broken windows are good for GDP and you only care about the GDP and economic productivity, then we should be breaking stuff more often. You should be cheering vandalism. Those are created jobs. But that's the kind of internal logic that, of course, like, we don't subscribe to. It's like, well, no, we care about actual lives. We care about living free, and so on, and our own happiness and the happiness of others, threatened by fascists. So we got that good. Is there any other, side news besides electoral strategy?
I think we should get into it. As far as, because that's the real big news that everyone on the left is buzzing about.
At least last week.
So
we're a week behind, but that's fine. It gives us a little more time. I think it
gives us time to reflect and really
develop
our ideas about what's going on with this big election that just happened.
Yeah. So in the greater context of the discussion of electoral strategy. So first, there's that the question posed by anarchists or between anarchists is, do we even vote at all? Now, I fall on the side that it's okay as an anarchist to interact with the electoral system as we interact with all types of sectors of the society.
Yes.
When we distribute food and do food not bombs, we are working and dumpster diving and all those other kinds of things on the fringes that we are interacting with society. So, to act on the fringe electorally as well is not verboten to me. And there's also an article or two that makes the anarchist case for voting, or at least why it isn't like just like consent
elections
to be governed.
Because
guess what? They're going to govern you anyway. There's no choice. There's no
they're going to
that
happen.
You need to give. So participate, but also you do everything else too. I mean, it's sometimes the question is framed as a, well, you either vote, and once you accept electoral politics as the mechanism, you don't do anything else.
Mm-hmm.
But that's a binary that no one should accept.
Right.
And not many in their heart do. Heart and head.
I believe elections are a good vehicle for radicals to use, mainly as a force for educating the working class about the limitations of electoral politics.
As a Green, and it's my way of pointing out to others who are confused about what the Greens really are, policy-wise, or to explain why they always kind of seem not all together, is I've kind of crystallized it down to, like many groups, Democrats included, the Democrat Party even, when they talk of the country is center-right and we need to appeal to the center-right, in fiscal responsibility. You know, all those Democrats who live in Albany as well, who say that they are socially liberal, fiscally conservative.
I cannot stand that phrase.
Neither do I. But I've met some. And so they're
all over the place.
But they're not the majority. They're just the majority of active voters. So obviously growing the voter base and going to those who don't normally vote, aren't registered or are registered, but only vote in presidential races, should be targeted, which campaigns usually don't, even the more progressive ones. Although we'll talk about the exception. Oh, yes. The Green Party and they're not alone in this.
As a group.
Appeals to the uneducated instead of educating with their appeal. So any group, party, or whatever, that's always like, we can't say what we're really about because people don't know what we're really about. But then that conceals to the public and yourself of what you're really about. If you're basically pretending to be something else. Now, Bernie-crats, in a way, are in fact more honest about this in that they are democratic socialists. They do believe in a nicer capitalism.
Well, at least they call themselves Democrat. They like that label, democratic socialist.
Okay, label aside, their policies are a nicer capitalism.
Their policies are social democratic.
It's
very much flip-flopped.
With a better welfare state and as they put it, regulation of corporate power. They believe that is their goal, so they can educate people about that, and it works for them. And it's like, yeah, now if only socialists did that too. Because for the last 50 years, for material reasons, okay, from the 50s and 60s on, you would be arrested if you were honest about being a socialist.
Yes.
So, or you would never work anywhere in this town again, quote unquote.
That's true.
So, and that's technically still in effect, okay? But let's say just as political organizations that can be separate from your workplace, if you can manage that. To say, we are socialists, and I'm going to talk about what that really is with my pitch. And people appreciate that.
Yes.
They like it a lot better.
People are at least a little bit more open to that these days.
Than going like, well, I'm going to pitch socialism as something else because I think that's what people will think is palatable. And I hear this from other activists all the time of, we don't want to push too far. We don't want to... people are always talking about what the public cannot handle.
There's a lot of socialists, myself included, who would say that is dumbing down socialism. And when you start talking about social democratic reforms,
dumbs down America.
It dumbs down the movement as well.
Yeah, it dumbs down everybody. And
like, you can't talk about socialism as something that you think other people want to hear. Socialism is what it is. It's the working class controlling the means of production in a truly democratic society.
But to wrap up this segment and in our little intro here is that if you've ever found yourself complaining or listening to and nodding your head to anyone who says, oh, America's dumbed down, we're all responsible for that because many people have decided that either Americans are not worth educating or it's too hard or it's not worth it or just they're all... You know, infantilizing, meaning everyone's children. I can be the parent, so I can lie to them. That's an authoritarian
Which is what the two parties both do.
Hell with that. And we are going to go deep now into electoral politics and strategy. In the context of the recent victory of Miss Cortez, she has three names, but I think if it's hopefully not seen as disrespectful, I'm just going to say her name's Cortez.
Full name Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez.
Thank you.
In that congressional district down in Queens in the Bronx.
And I mean, no disrespect by shortening it to just one, her final name. Because I know it's a very Hispanic cultural thing to actually list all your names,
yes.
Your maiden names and all that. And that's how, like, certain nobles, because no noble wants to actually give up their name, so even when they marry, they'll have, like, 10 different surnames. Let's see. So this is, okay, so I'm going to...
we're going to frame this up first with something that Howie Hawkins...
Yeah, Howie Hawkins, our gubernatorial candidate, Green Party candidate here in New York.
A Socialist Party member.
Which isn't getting... I'm not seeing enough of in the news, and unfortunately, because And this will I'll cover this a different day. I'll have to find it again. But it was basically an article where someone, maybe it was Amanda, or a local kind of gumshoe reporter, was asking the people who do the polls, the colleges, why they don't include third-party candidates.
Yeah, why not?
And they basically said, when it came down to it, we don't want to. There were these other excuses they would give, like, oh, well, based on the rules of, like, well, they're not qualified candidates, and they give all these excuses,
and they
but
are
really,
in fact
that's
legally
all
qualified.
They just don't want to. They're just like, well, we're just comfortable just covering the Dem and maybe the Republicans.
Well, probably the big people who donate to the colleges are both quite partisan and don't want to see that sort of thing on the poll and will say, hey, yes, if you ask this question, we're not going to give you your endowment.
That's almost subconscious at that point, though, where it's like maybe it's in their minds, but they're definitely not going to say it. So
they don't want to confuse people with a third party option. Even.
Yeah. So this is how his case for an independent left party from the bottom up by Black Agenda Report, published by them, and which are very green friendly. And I want to point out that he's general about independent left party. Now the Greens count as this, but so is the Socialist Party.
Yes.
And so does Socialist Alternative. And so my framing in those three groups, if you've ever heard of them, is that they can work together and we can like share lines, or you know, Socialist Party members can run on the green line.
Which is exactly what Howie's doing.
You're right. So Democrats may replace the irrationalities and racist chauvinism of Trump, but they won't replace the austerity capitalism and militaristic imperialism to which the Democratic Party is committed. If the 13 million votes received by self-styled Democratic Socialist Bernie Sanders in the 2016 Democratic presidential primaries accomplished nothing else positive, it put the questions of socialism and independent working-class politics up for public discussion. I've been critical of Sanders' socialism because his policy platform was New Deal liberalism, not socialism. The New Deal was the compromise to keep capitalism going, devolving into fascism. But generally, this is called the sheepdog critique of Bernie, that he is a herald to progressives who had an option of voting green for Jill Stein and Ajamu Baraka back into a party run by billionaires that he professes to oppose. Nonetheless, the broad liberal to radical American left is now discussing what socialism is and debating whether the left should be inside or outside the Democratic Party. Still kind of a lopsided discussion, though many are on the inside. So this is called, at least by him and now myself, the party within a party strategy.
Mm-hmm.
As we enter the run-up to the 2018 midterms this year, Trumpism is weakening under its own self-inflicted wounds. The ambivalent legitimacy of Trump's election by a popular minority due to the eccentricities of the Electoral College, the specialness, and a spreading realization that behind the economic populism, it's just reactionary Republican nonsense. A massive resistance against Trump and his administration has emerged, and so on and so on. So he cites from Jacobin a guy named Ackerman, and he outlines the party within a party kind of model, which is what the DSA does.
Yes.
So it's kind of a critique of
what they believe they're starting to be successful with. That's what this...
Right, Cortez's victory is about.
Yes.
Play the game of respectability. Even without working with nonprofits who are usually captured by money, big money, and so on, there's still kind of issues and limits to deal with. I think I need to track down the right... Okay, so first... This has been done before, so this is really important to myself.
Yeah,
this
is not
a
new strategy.
The party within a party approach has been tried in a variety of forms since the late 1930s by labor PACs, waves of reformed democratic club networks, McGovern's New Politics, Michael Harrington's DSA, Jesse Jackson's Rainbow Coalition, Howard Dean's Democracy for America, Dennis Kucinich's Progressive Democrats of America.
Oh, Dennis.
Obama's Organizing for America. And now Sanders, Our Revolution.
I haven't heard anything from Organizing for America for years, man. That
they all seem to just fade as soon as they appear.
And Howard Dean was like super centrist. He was not. He was with Hillary all the way.
He's now a talking head for health insurance companies.
Maybe he's a screaming
head.
He's
now anti-single payer.
Unbelievable. Totally believable.
It's believable in that I saw him speak, and that was a good point in my life where I was trying to decide what I really wanted and believed in.
Yep.
And like this guy was held up as a hero by others, progressives, because he was at the time the most progressive candidate in the 2004 primary. But what does that mean? Like, what does that say that this guy, who talks of, because most of his speech was just about finding common ground with right-wingers. And it's like, well, can't we band together first? Because it doesn't sound like we're banding together if you are the most left candidate in a Democratic primary and you got trashed by the media for being excited for yourself. The political dynamic of all inside-outside approaches leads increasingly inside in the Democratic Party. Okay, so this is an answer to like, oh, well, we can have groups outside and inside. But that still skews towards the inside approach. One must disavow outside options in order to be allowed with inside the Democratic committees, the campaigns, the primary ballots, and debates.
Yeah.
Instead of changing the Democratic Party changes inside-outside activists.
Yeah, it sucks you in.
This isn't theory for me. I've lived it. I've watched it happen to other people.
Oh, yeah.
I watch it happen increasingly, even now, to other people. Careerism sets in. Many of the veterans of these inside-outside organizations, which are all perfectly well-intentioned people, by the way, who at one time talked of realignment of the parties to create an American Labor Party or the Rainbow Party, became Democratic operatives and politicians whose careers depend on loyalty to corporate Democrats.
They get you. This is how they get you in. This is entryism, which we'll talk a little bit more about
Sanders
later.
Followed... Right, yeah, as your title. Ackerman's blueprint astutely criticizes most of these efforts, including Sanders' own Our Revolution, for being top-down nonprofits without accountability to an organized membership. But his blueprint still falls into the same trap of failing to establish the left's public identity as an alternative advocating socialist system change. That is opposed to, which by the way, Jacobin writers all seem to be, by failing, by the way, I say same, but let's say they are. I'm going to act in good faith as I want to. By failing to act on its own and speak for itself in U.S. elections since the late 1930s,